Ramiz, good to see you again here in New York, and thank you for sitting with me today to discuss global equity. Looking back on 2019, we can say that global equity markets have performed quite well, recovering nicely after their weak Q4 2018 performance. Of course, the U.S. Fed has helped fuel the rally with a more accommodative stance, and the U.S. consumer has continued to power ahead, this despite continuing trade tensions between China and the U.S. Overall, global growth should come in at about 3%, and this seems supportive for markets, particularly if it picks up a bit in 2020. We'd like this podcast to be informative for our listeners, and I know, Ramiz, that you'd like to spend some time talking today about quality investing and what that term means. Could you explain for our listeners the framework you have for seeking out quality? Tell us what you consider to be a quality company.
Right. So I think we can break it down firstly in terms of the objective and then what are the attributes. So the objective is look for companies with sustainable, predictable earnings growth. That's the outcome. But in terms of what are the attributes of the businesses, firstly, companies that are in attractive industry structures. So industries that are consolidating as opposed to fragmenting, and companies that are increasing their market share within those industries. We want secular growth in those industries. So ideally, you know, we can take a longer term view if there's a strong tailwind of secular growth. You know, an industry like autos, for example, is a purchase you make once every 7 years. That's not typically what we like. We like industries like e-commerce, for example, where you see strong repeatability of demand. And what's really important is high level of return with low requirement for capital invested. So, you know, all those criteria can be satisfied, but you could be in a very capital intensive industry and it wouldn't be attractive. So we like high returns. An example would be the athletic footwear sector, and within that, Nike and Adidas. So if you think about Nike and Adidas market share, it's 50% and it's growing. And new entrants have really found it difficult to enter this space. An example being, you know, Under Armour, which has done well in the US, hasn't done so well internationally, and it hasn't done so well outside of their core basketball category. So it's difficult in terms of barriers. There's secular growth. There's a strong theme towards athleisure that will continue. And the economic returns are high and have become higher as these businesses have become more direct to consumer and less reliant on wholesale partners.
Mm-hmm. And so how do you think about a quality company then?
I'd like to see some earnings delivery and even better earnings momentum. An example is Safran. So Safran is the leading narrowbody engine manufacturer. It's a very attractive two-player market. And they had a new engine program called the Leap. So there was some risk around that as to whether they could deliver this new engine. Secondly, they made an acquisition of Zodiac, which is in the aircraft interiors segment. Now, they delivered at least in line, if not better than expectations on both those risks. So that was important. And secondly, earnings momentum actually pick up because the maintenance from their existing CFM engine program was coming through better than expected. So we actually have more confidence in Safran as they've gotten through those hurdles and we've seen earnings momentum.
So not to use a bad pun, it was taking off in terms of its growth prospects, right?
On both twin engines.
Okay. So it is, in terms of quality, a combination of quality and growth, really.
Correct. So I think you can have industries that are consolidated, but if there's no growth, like let's say in the utility sector, it doesn't really fit.
Okay. Has your definition of quality changed over the past year or two or three? And what would be an example of a company that you previously considered quality but no longer do?
So the definition of quality hasn't changed. However, industries and companies within industries can change. An example would be a company which was previously quality, which now don't consider high enough quality, would be Bristol Myers. Mm-hmm. So Bristol Myers, they had a drug called Optivo. They were looking for approval for a lung cancer indication from the FDA and they didn't get it. And that caused a sharp correction in the stock price. So there was a lot of risk around a single event, which reduces predictability. Secondly, they didn't have a diverse enough portfolio of products. And thirdly, the pipeline is another question that struggled to get confidence in. So look at earnings sustainability. Bristol didn't really fit. And I would say that's, in general, the pharma space and the drug space is an area that analyze a lot more closely to ensure that there's diversification and a strong pipeline. However, you know, on the other side, a sector which we would say wasn't as high quality and as moving to what we think is quality is the cruise line sector and Royal Caribbean within that. So if you think about historically, this sector had issues with oversupply. You know, supply growth was running at 8% plus. There was high leverage in terms of the players that were operating in the sector. So you think about Royal Caribbean in particular, they had high leverage. And, you know, the older ships didn't have as high returns as the newer ships do. So what we've seen, though, over the last 10 years is the industry has become more consolidated. So the top three players have around 75% market share versus 50% 10 years ago. Supply has become more rational. So supply growth has come down to sort of mid-single digits. And the returns are improving. So the new ships have returns of invested capital of 15 to 20%. And they're replacing the old rust buckets that are being phased out. So you're getting higher incremental returns as well. And Royal Caribbean is a name that is taking market share and outperforming versus the sector.
So clearly a quality growth company today that wasn't several years ago.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Listen, let's switch over from talking about quality and growth to talking about value. With higher valuations than a few years ago for some stocks, how do you think about sizing more highly valued positions? Or on the flip side, have you seen some areas of the market where valuations have fallen or not risen as much that look attractive to you now?
Well, look, I think with highly valued positions, the question is always, is the longer-term growth outlook improving and is the tail of growth getting more visible? And if we do get confidence in that, and I would say an area which is a great example is the SaaS space, the software as a service area. So companies like Microsoft or SAP have greater visibility long-term as a result of the shift to a more subscription-like, high cash flow business model. But in general, also what I would say is sectors and stocks within sectors can get expensive at times. And a good example of that was back in 2017. You know, we thought that the tech sector got expensive. However, on the other side, consumer discretionary names, particularly in the US, were relatively attractive. Names like Nike or TJ Maxx and even Amazon were attractive. And you flip that around to 2019, you've actually seen the discretionary sector become more expensive. But what's become cheap have been some sectors that have had specific, let's say, concerns around them, like the medtech sector and managed care, because of concerns around universal healthcare, particularly if the Democrats come in. So evaluate those situations, and if there is an overreaction, like we saw in the medtech space, then react to those opportunities as well.
Yeah, that makes good sense. All right, well, listen, looking ahead to 2020, I know you don't have a crystal ball, but could you spend a few minutes talking about what our investors should expect in the coming year for global equity markets?
Well, look, I think the issues around trade are still going to be critical. As you know, we're getting close to a phase one of a trade deal. Now, I think we need to be cognizant that the tariffs are still significantly higher than they were 12 months ago. And a lot of the thornier issues around trade are going to remain, i.e. issues around how you're going to resolve IP violations, access for US companies into China through where they have to go through joint ventures. Those sorts of issues are going to be more difficult to work out, and I think that's going to be a limitation of moving to a phase two or a phase three deal. So I think trade is going to continue to be an overhang. The other point is, you know, fiscal stimulus, both in the US and in China, is going to be difficult to incrementally stimulate demand. We think, you know, fiscal deficit in the US is already quite high because of the tax cuts and the budget expansion from 2018. And in China, basically, the ability to stimulate is a lot more limited now, particularly on the monetary side, given the concerns around the monetary expansion in 2016. Overall leverage levels are still very high in China. So I think given that sort of framework, growth will still be on the lower side relative to what it has been in the past. And hence, companies need to be able to deliver in a slower growth environment, whether that's in the US or whether that's globally.
Okay. All right, Ramiz. Well, thank you very much for spending time with us today to give us your thoughts on quality and growth and valuations. Look forward to continued diligence in 2020. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug.
Bye-bye.
Disclosure. This recording is for information purposes only, and nothing contained in this recording should constitute a solicitation or offer or a recommendation to buy or sell any investment instruments, to effect any transactions, or to conclude any legal act of any kind whatsoever. Except as permitted under applicable copyright laws, none of this information may be reproduced, adapted, uploaded to a third party, linked to, framed, performed in public, distributed or transmitted in any form by any process without the specific written consent of Vontobel Asset Management. To the maximum extent permitted by law, Vontobel will not be liable in any way for any loss or damage suffered by you through use or access to this information, or Vontobel's failure to provide this information. Our liability for negligence, breach of contract or contravention of any law as a result of our failure to provide this information or any part of it, or for any problems with this information, which cannot be lawfully excluded, is limited, at our option and to the maximum extent permitted by law, to resupplying this information or any part of it to you, or to paying for the resupply of this information or any part of it to you. Keep in mind that past performance is not a reliable indicator of current or future performance, and forecasts are inherently limited and should not be relied upon as an indicator of future performance.